to eliminate the freeze. And so if you're not going to do it in statute, you wouldn't attempt to do it in
negotiation. I'm trying to say it the other way around. We wouldn't do in bargaining unilaterally. First, if we reach an agreement with the union, it's whatever we can agree with, and they're an equal party at the table. So if we can't agree on a thaw, then there won't be a thaw. But if we're not able to reach agreement, then we talk about the potential for unilateral implementation, and we're not likely to implement anything unilaterally for a bargaining unit that we're not doing for those not covered because of statute.
And you're saying you're not going to unilaterally unfreeze?
The statute is going to put a permanent thaw on those covered by the statute, and that would be a reasonable guideline for us unilaterally, if it ever came to that, for those covered by collective bargaining. The permanent freeze in the bill. There's a permanent freeze in the bill.
Okay, and you're saying it so that if you do it for the non-covered, if you were to ever get to the point where there was a unilateral reduction for state employees after the collective bargaining process or something like that, not suggesting that that would happen, but if that did, it's the department's position, the administration's position, that they would not eliminate the freeze, or they would not thaw the freeze.
Right.
Representative Brown.
Thank you. Not sure if I have the same question you do. I'm on page 3, lines. Well, being from Anchorage, lines 12 through 19. I'm just trying to understand how this would work. It seems to me that this language says the employee's salary remains at its July 15, 1987 level. And until it would go up. So does anything here preclude salary reductions for other, that if those were to be negotiated in collective bargaining?
Okay. The bill only applies to those who are not covered by a collective bargaining agreement. So we could agree to something different with each and every one of our bargaining units. Some may take a thaw, some may not take a thaw, some may have a stepped thaw schedule. I mean, there's all sorts of possibilities to talk about at the table. For those covered by the statute, and this is the provision which is in the current agreements, they're frozen and they stayed frozen until something catches their salary up to what they should be getting. Something catches their salary up so that what they are getting what they should get exceeds what they are getting with the freeze in place. The three items here are a change in the statute, in the state salary schedule. Fairbanks being an example, it's coming down two steps for about 6%, 6 or 7%. An employee who makes no change and in 2 years receives two merit increases would catch up under B, and therefore the salary would thaw, and their next increase, they would get an increase. If for some manner the state had money and costs soar and we gave employees a 10% pay increase, that 10% up exceeds the 7% that's frozen, and the employee would get the increase, the 3% finally. And this may take years depending on circumstances, but the provision is they're not going to go down as long as they're staying in the same place.
Regardless of what happens in collective bargaining,
yeah,
these people would just be
covered by.
Would this preclude ever any decrease in that group of employees' salaries?
No. If you look at the small C, a couple further lines down, the section does not prohibit reduction of employees based on voluntary and involuntary demotions. So if they're changing job classes or going to less responsible work, even under the statute, they're going to receive a lower pay for that. Dennis.
Other than demotion, I guess what I'm thinking is if the governor were to, there's been some speculation that if impasse were reached in collective bargaining, that he might impose some new salary schedule on the collective bargaining employees.
Right.
Okay. If this bill were law, how would the non-covered employees be affected? I mean, we could end up in a situation where there was a disparity. Because it seems to me that this is saying for no reason ever would this person's salary ever go down except demotion.
Okay. The other provisions of the bill, the committee substitute part of this, the Me Too, says the salary schedule is going to go down. People paid on the schedule are going to go down or up, whatever happens with general government.
Mr. McMullen, maybe if I could clarify, these sections apply only the pay differential provisions. Section 7.
Well, I hear you saying that, but when you read it, it doesn't seem to be
that. Well, I think you have to start out with one. That one, the employee salary may not be reduced as a result of pay differential and the employee salary. I think it's to try to work within the constructs there of only the difference that would come from the pay differential change.
Okay, but it seems like if you have two equal items in the law, they both have to be true, and number two says that person's salary is never going to decline for any reason.
Okay. In a situation where both the geographic differential goes down and as a result of collective bargaining, the schedule goes down 4%, and that applies to these people, they would take the 4%. Because the first sentence in Section 7, if the salary would be reduced by application of the pay differential, it's only the pay differential effect that keeps them whole. If the schedule goes down, they're going to go down with the schedule. But they would go down just with the schedule goes down, but not with the schedule plus the differential may go down.
I see what you're saying. I don't think that this says that.
Representative Cole.
Obviously, we're on not a controversial bill here. I have a parochial concern. Could you help me? If you touched upon this while I was out of the room, please tell me, and I'll try to deal with it in another way. Could you explain the differential numbers? I mean, how this list on page 2 works?
No.
Okay. Could you just tell me how it differs? I don't really need to know how it works. I just need to know sort of how you compare it with the existing law 39-27-020, which has the phrase pay steps above basic salary schedule and has small numbers, and then this says percentage pay differential. Is one, can you just tell me how they compare in terms of how they're applied?
Yeah. Since you have the statute open, a page or two preceding this section is the schedule itself.
Yeah, got that.
Okay. Under the current statute, where it says one-step differential, a job which starts at 8A would, as A step, would have B.
Follow that. How about on this one?
Okay. Under the bill, we will pay a percentage difference.
4% more, 5% more, 38% more, and so forth.
Right, right.
Okay, now, it seems like it's attractive for everybody from halfway down the list down, but seems to make some very, let me ask it this way. On what basis were the differentials changed so noticeably from the old schedule?
Okay, 4 years ago, as part of the collective bargaining settlement at that time, it was agreed with general government supervisors to do a study of geographic differentials, and that funding for that came to the legislature as part of the settlement cost of those contracts. With that money, we advertised, found a firm to do the geographic differential study for us. They brought back the results. The bargaining agreement provided a means if union disagreed with us on how to have that resolved. That happened all the way through an arbitration decision. The percentages you see here are not the percentages we came up with the study, but it's the percentages that the arbitrator said were right after looking at our information and APEA's information.
Let me just ask you here. District 3, what is that, is Ketchikan? District 4 is Ketchikan, District 3,
Four is Juno.
Four is Juno. That's a zero. I can understand that. Three is Sitka. Okay. And I guess I'm trying to find out how come you haven't been sued on District 2. There's no way in this world that it costs the same to live in Angoon as it does to live in Juno or to live in Pollock as it does to live in Ketchikan. How in the world... I'm going to ask both parties this. How in the world did you get away with this? I don't know what other terms to ask you. Well, these are.
No.
It says election district. Not bracketed. It says geographic areas, election districts.
Section 3927020B, which is not changed by the bill, identifies these as the 1961 election districts.
Okay, let's put this aside.
Okay.
And ask you how you arrived at saying that Election District 2 has got the same cost of living as Election District 1.
The study conducted by our contractor...
Now I know how come you didn't get sued. I'm wondering how you can defend yourself from my litigation.
Okay. The
I know we only have 28 PEA members in the district, but still.
It's hard to get them together to form a suit.
You'd be surprised. I'm sorry. I respectfully ask all my jokes to be deleted. Could you just tell me how it is that you arrived at the presumption that the two districts are the same?
The survey, both ours and APEA's, looked at costs for a whole lot of things and developed a weighting factor for how each of them compared to Anchorage and got the right weights and the spending patterns and a whole bunch of other things and ran through a gigantic computer model to come out with the weighted average cost. And where food may be higher for store-bought food in Angoon, the fact that they're buying less food in Angoon because they're doing hunting may have affected it.
State workers hunt for their food?
The survey done by the state did not look at what it cost state workers. It looked at what it cost to live in those areas.
Well, I would like the detailed analysis because, all kidding aside,
maybe you can provide Representative Gall the report. There's a whole study report.
Yeah, I have a copy with me.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I won't pursue the line of questioning any further, but the reason I brought it up at committee is that I don't think it's a personal matter between me and the department. I think that if they are summarizing and saying that District 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, 8, 9, and 10 are equal, which is very different from what is in here, irrespective of the change of election district, I just want to put it on the record in this hearing that that doesn't compute in any book I've ever seen or any other department's evaluation, including the Department of Education. And I would like the full documentation. Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Could you tell us, under the changes that are being made here in the differentials, which communities go up and which ones go down, or is that here somewhere in the back?
I have it at the chair back here. I'll grab it. From current statute, okay. District 2, which is Wrangell-Petersburg, will be reduced by 3.11%. District 3, Sitka, will be reduced by 3.11%. 5, Icy Strait Lynn Canal, will be reduced by 1.68%. 6A, which is Cordova Duty Station, reduced by 3.16%. 6B Valdez, 6A is the district, which Cordova is the principal city. 6B is Valdez specifically. It's being reduced by 7.16%. District 9, Seward, reduced by 6.68%. 10, Kenai Cook Inlet, reduced by 6.68%. 11, Kodiak, increased by 2.32%. 12, Aleutian Islands, increased by 0.11%. 13, Bristol Bay, increased by 0.11%. Excuse me, those two were decreases, I'm sorry. 14, Bethel, increase 6.74%. 15A, Yukon, Kuskokwim, except for Nanana, decreased 6.22%. Nanana decreased 11.26%. 16A, which is Fairbanks and the district south of the Arctic Circle, being reduced 10.16%. 16, north of the Arctic Circle, increased by 5.78%. Token Delta Junction decreased by 2.31%. District 17, which is Barrow, Kobuk, increased by 5.78%. 18, Nome, decreased 2.2%. 19, Wade Hampton, decreased by 1.29%, and outside salaries increased by 3.78%.
In Anchorage?
The others are no change from current.
We have Sherry Shelley also here to testify on behalf of the APA.
On, this is an arbitrator's decision, the result of an arbitrator's decision. Is that right?
Correct.
What were the positions, what was your, it's probably a hard question, you have to give me the positions for all those, I guess, but how far off were you from the union on these issues, and maybe you could provide in writing what your position was.
Well, what was the trend, you know, I mean?
Well, as expected, the union didn't think things should go down as nearly as much as we thought they should go down. There was a major difference in our methodology. They surveyed state employees, whereas we surveyed the cost to live in the community. The arbitrator on that specific issue ruled that the community cost was the appropriate cost. And after that, it was a question of dealing with whose data he thought better represented the cost in the area. He raised costs in the settlement in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 districts, and lowered it for 15B, which is Nanana. That's the changes the arbitrator made from our position.
I understand that you want to move quickly and get ourselves adjourned, but I think that when this bill comes back to the table, the discussion has to be conducted as to the basis on which the law is going to be made regarding the facts of the situation. For example, just because many of my constituents do not have indoor plumbing and feel that that is appropriate to their lifestyle, very few state workers stationed out in my district accept that as their lifestyle. And although the folks in my district might like them to live according to the norms of the community, we're not going to get the state personnel that we want out there that way. So I'm sure that, you know, you and the unions can debate and use arbitration to resolve your various feelings about the issue. But when it comes to saying that the cost of living in Angoon is the same as the cost of living in Juneau for a person assigned there in a professional capacity, that's just patently absurd. And I think we need some substantive factual way of looking at this. Now, if that's not the intent of the legislature, that may be the way it is, but certainly is my intent to at least see the matter explored.
Mr. Gall and others, I'd like to clarify. I hope people realize this is only for the non-covered employees. The covered employees already have this geographic differential in place pursuant to the arbitration. So for good or for bad or whatever, this is in place for the bulk of our state employees. It would be only these judicial, legislative, and exempt people that this bill would apply to. If we adopted something different than this, then those people would be out of sync with most of our state employees.
Mr. Chairman, the reason that I make the statement and use the language I use and insist upon putting it on the record is very straightforward. I don't have a lot of non-covered employees out of my district, and the impact on the citizens and the state employees out there is probably nil, if not minimal. But what gets put into statute, often what goes around comes around. You know, today we're basing our statutes on arbitration, and tomorrow people are going to look at our statutes and say, well, what did the legislature accept? And that becomes a factor in an arbitration decision. I am not willing to concede for a moment that this schedule is accurate. And from what you're telling me there, it presumes that the cost of living in Anchorage relative to Washington State has changed a great deal. That may be true. Am I supposed to believe that the cost in Kodiak has gone up a great deal and the cost in my region has gone down a great deal? I'm not willing to accept that. So, you know, I want that on the legislative history as well, because when that next arbitration decision comes down, I'm going to make sure there's an attorney from my district there to make sure that the interests of the people are being represented, and I think there's a heck of a problem in this. So I'm not looking to make the change necessarily, and I may accept your logic, which is good logic, that we're looking for consistency and the employees negotiated. However, when you've got 20 employees in all of the 800 miles of District 2 and considerably more in the town of Kodiak, that tells me a lot about why Kodiak did better than District 2. So this is not an issue that's going to go away, and I'm placing it on the record for the purpose of making sure it doesn't go away. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mullen. Sherry Shelley, I apologize for your... I know you've been waiting a long time to testify.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Sherry Shelley with the Alaska Public Employees Association. Originally, I hadn't planned on testifying on this legislation, but this is much different from the original bill. To answer the questions, first about geographic differential, we did submit to an arbitration. We did a cost survey. The state did a cost survey. The major difference in our arbitration was the way the surveys were conducted. In the state survey, it was a total Alaskan population. We maintained that our employees didn't have the opportunity to participate in a subsistence lifestyle, and so therefore their costs were different than maybe those who were not employed at all. We lost that issue, and we currently do have this schedule in our contract, although we are negotiating at this time. One way, and I don't have language with me today, and I apologize for that, to address that is in Section 6, where it talks about the cost of living study. It says the survey may address factors as determined by the director that are also relevant in the review of the state salary schedule. It may be appropriate to add language in there to say what factors should be considered and whether you want just what population you want surveyed in order to determine what geographic differentials are appropriate. And we can certainly come up with some language to suggest to you on that matter, and that may resolve some of Representative Gall's problems. With regard to the other sections of this bill, the personal leave provisions do not cover APEA employees. We are under an annual leave, sick leave system. However, a large number of our employees do promote into the exempt and partially exempt service. This legislation only allows the transfer of 15 days of medical leave to personal leave. I personally know employees who've had hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of sick leave on the books. I don't think that the transfer of 15 days of sick leave to personal leave is adequate. In my personal case, I don't believe I am an employee who abuses sick leave. In the last year, for example, I have had my mother have two cancer surgeries, neither of which took 10 days. My children's father died. My child was in the hospital, and I have been sick with the flu twice. I assure you, I have used more than 15 days of sick leave. Now, I may have had an extraordinary year, but there are a number of employees who use sick leave to care for children. I believe Representative Brown has a bill in to allow people more time off to be with young children. It is certainly appropriate that people be with their children when they're sick, to be with their parents when they're ill. And 15 days, as suggested in this legislation, simply isn't adequate. We would submit, and we don't have language with us, if the administration is looking for ways to reduce cost in the exempt service, one way would to be reduce the number of advanced step placement hires in the exempt service. Numerous classified employees have called our organization, and we do have language that I can bring tomorrow, objecting to the fact that exempt, partially exempt, and those employees not covered by collective bargaining agreement, such as those employees in the Division of Labor Relations, are being offered steps at range F or at range D.
I know of personal situations where the employees were offered step placements to preclude any reduction in pay should there be a lower salary after July 1st. So we would think that that would be a more relevant way to reduce the cost of government than looking at the personal leave statutes. And looking at Section 8, looking at the language, I didn't really have a problem, but looking at the analysis and then looking at the language, I have a problem. The sectional analysis says, if a new GGU agreement has not been implemented before July 1st, 1987, and the current salary schedule in AS 3927011A applies until the agreement is implemented. That negates collective bargaining. We may be at impasse on June 30th, and we may not have an extension. We have approximately 3,000 of our employees who, by law, are entitled to binding arbitration. We believe that they have a right to have their case heard before an arbiter, before any salary schedule is implemented. Likewise, this doesn't leave any process for mediation, which we believe by law we're required to do. So this is taking the guts out of collective bargaining. It is a surprise to us, and no one has even discussed this language with us. So at this point, we can't support this legislation, and we will provide the committee.
Ms. Shelley, I'm trying to follow you here. I got a little lost. You start on the bottom of page 3 in Section 8.
Section 8.
It's my understanding this entire section applies to employees not in collective bargaining units.
It's the language on line 2, rather tricky language, a good drafting job. The adjustments for the classified and partially exempt
service... I'm sorry, where are you reading?
Page 4, line 2. The adjustments for the classified and partially exempt service not in a collective bargaining unit shall be made in the same pay period as a new plan. If the state has not, goes on to say, if the state has not implemented a new pay plan for the general government unit by July 1st, 1987, the classified and partially exempt service who are not in collective bargaining units shall be paid in accordance with AS 3927011A. And then if you look at what the analysis says, doesn't have a page 2, it's the last section 8, it says, if a new GGU agreement has not been implemented before July 1st, 1987, then the current salary schedule contained in AS 3927011A applies until the agreement is implemented. What that says to me is if the legislature should pass a salary schedule at the end of this session and my employees have not reached an agreement by July 1st, the salary schedule can be implemented without mediation or without their rights to binding arbitration, negating the collective bargaining process.
I hate to be thick here. I still don't follow you, though. I mean, where are we talking in that section, or where do we reference?
I'm reading the sectional analysis.
Well, I don't know who wrote the sectional analysis, but why don't we look at the language in Section 8?
Okay. The sectional analysis is done by Teresa B. Kramer, Legislative Counsel.
Well,
and in Section... I just got the language, so I haven't had my attorney look at it.
Okay.
But this is what the legislative attorney says that it means. And I could probably come back to you with better information tomorrow, but that gives me very great concern if that is the analysis of Ms. Kramer. She's pretty knowledgeable on these issues.
Right. Representative Brown?
So you're assuming that these words here in the sectional analysis are applying to someone. Is your concern that they apply to these classified and partially exempt people who are not covered by collective bargaining, or are you assuming that this applies to everyone?
My concern is on the stroke of midnight, June 30th, I am without a contract if I don't have an extension. And at that point, without benefit of mediation, without benefit of arbitration, a salary schedule could be implemented on the classified people who do not yet have concluded their bargaining. And historically, we have not concluded bargaining for either the GGU or the supervisory unit when their agreement expires. Sometimes we have worked with a day-to-day extension, sometimes we have worked with a two-week extension, and sometimes we've worked with no extension at all. But never have we had a salary schedule implemented during that period of time.
Mr. Chairman, if I could continue. I thought that the bill applies only to non-covered employees.
or I'm sorry, employees not covered by collective bargaining. And if I didn't have an agreement on July 1st,
you wouldn't be covered.
I don't have a collective bargaining agreement in place. If I continue, just another question here. I was trying to follow your explanation on the geographic differentials. Did I hear you say correctly that this schedule that's now listed on page 2 of the community substitute is presently the schedule in effect in the contract,
in the
yes. APA contract? It became effective, I believe, January 15th. Yeah.
Well, I guess that answers one of my questions, which was why are we doing this if our policies for non-covered employees generally follow what's done in collective bargaining, but we're just late catching up with what was done earlier, right? I mean that.
No. This we're not going to be. Oh, I'm sorry. On geographic differential.
On the geographic differential,
yes.
You're making your statute conform to what is currently in our general government unit agreement.
And then geographic differentials are also an item that are being bargained
right.
in the ongoing negotiations. So it might change again, and we might
then
you come might. Back and change it again.
But these were just recently updated. And my concern, my major concerns in this legislation are not the geographic differential, except to the extent of what, how you are going to conduct a survey in the future and what is going to be included in that survey and what population you're going to survey. And as I read it, the director of personnel or labor relations has full latitude in determining the answers to those questions, and that causes us some concern because I doubt they're going to do two surveys.
Just to conclude that concern though, for tomorrow, I would appreciate if you could just have your attorneys look at that. I still don't see anything in the language of the bill that would lead one to the conclusion that you made. If it is, we need to know about it, notwithstanding the explanation given by our attorney, which obviously does not have the force of law. It's what's in the bill. Representative
yes.
Davis?
Well, I guess I'm reading this Section 8, and let me just state my concern here, and perhaps the attorney can address this, too. And the online line 8, it says here, shall be paid according to to AS 3927011, section, subsection A, from July 1st until the first pay period of implementation, the new plan, and I guess that is a directive too, I would think, because sometimes when you, let's say you don't have something together by July 1, but you do by, let's say, August 1, and normally, or at least in some cases, they do retroactive from July 1, but this would, it looks like this would say that you would not, there wouldn't be a retroactivity clause, and maybe I'm just reading that, but that looks like that's perhaps a case, too, and you may have your attorney look at that.
All right.
Other questions for Ms. Shelley?
Yeah, I
Representative
Friend. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sherry, on the issue of the differentials, my understanding is that if, I'm assuming that the collective bargaining process will work and that you'll reach agreement on a contract and that contract will be fully funded. But I'm still concerned about the area differential for my district and so are the people in my district that work for the government, work for the state government, of course. And I guess I want some assurances. I don't know if you can, but I want some assurances that right now collective bargaining protects that geographical differential. And I guess my understanding is that collective bargaining will, in the future, if collective bargaining is allowed to operate, will protect the geographical differential for Fairbanks and the freeze, so to speak. And I'm concerned about that. I want to know what your position is, if you can tell me without...
Well, obviously, we're in favor of freezing the salaries for the employees in Fairbanks. I think we could come up with some language that say in the absence of an agreement that those salaries will continue to be frozen so that couldn't be part of a unilateral implementation, and I think that was your concern.
Yeah. Well, also my concern is that, I'm told that the department is saying we can get at the end in a variety of different ways, and I guess I'm concerned as a member from Fairbanks that Fairbanks wouldn't be sold down the river so that some other area of the state wouldn't have to take as much of a cut or something like that. And I just want to get it on the record that it's your intention to maintain the freeze for those
APA's cases. Position is the salary should be frozen for all of those people.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Brown.
I have a question that's slightly off the bill. If there are any more questions on the bill, I just...
I have nobody else on the bill.
Is the fact that the ongoing negotiations between the union and the administration are confidential, is that a matter of statute, or is that a matter of the choice of the parties involved?
A matter of the choice of the parties involved.
And what considerations go into that? Why is it preferable from your perspective that those negotiations be confidential?
I think that it doesn't serve the best interest of either side to have bargaining proposals, bannered about in the press and inflame people. Both sides frequently start with clearly what is not their bottom line, and they work towards a mutual agreement, and we've had more success doing that in closed session behind closed doors.
You're in favor of that, right? Is there any other questions come before the committee on this bill?
Question for you, Mr. Chairman. You said tomorrow, what's your plan for dealing with this bill?
Bring it up. Discussion. I understand there will be amendment brought before the committee. Plans to move it out. Representative Boyer?
Just for notice, I may well have an amended title also because I'm concerned about the broad nature of the title, and so I may be looking at a title change.
If we have amendments or people are thinking of them, the sooner that they get before the committee, the better. Okay. Nothing else? House Finance adjourned.
I'll be back in 5 minutes. Okay.